Hello and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to hear what I have to say. I want to mention real quick, there will be some spoilers about the Star Trek Picard series. Nothing major, but as of this recording, it is a newer series, and so I want to mention that up front. If you are a fan of it, you may want to pause this episode and come back to it later, but don't wait too long. Also, I want to mention our sponsors, Rainbow Comics and Cards. I would recommend going there and picking up some trade paperback. I'm a fan of trade paperbacks because you can binge on a series that you love and get all the fun in one reading. One of them that I'd recommend would be Invincible by Image Comics. I read it a while back and really loved it. So you can go to two locations. They have a location in Sioux Falls and in Lincoln, or you can go to rainbowcomicsandcards.com and browse their website. I'll include a link in the show notes to the main webpage, and then the Lincoln store, I'll put their Facebook page in there as well. You can talk to Tim or Taylor, and they'll help you out and point you in the right direction. So without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up with Eddie. Today, we have the man, the myth, the legend, the podfather himself. How many other names do you have, Eddie?
You gotta stop.
Eddie Fosler from various podcasts, and I'll let Eddie introduce himself so he can tell you where he's at, where you can find him, and all the fun things, and then we'll get right into it.
Thanks, Lee. Goodness gracious. That intro's too hard. It's too big. Hello, I'm Eddie Fosler of Daydream Instruction Manual, Make Eternia Great Again, Paranormal Dads, and the lesser known Falcon Punch Thunder Dads, which isn't dead. It's just sleeping. It's
taking a nap.
And those are the four podcasts I'm involved with. I'm also one of the founding members of the Last Starfighters Entertainment Group. And that's a fun, like a bohemian style group of like eclectic creators and entertainers and writers and comedians and artists. And it's been an absolute blast. I'm looking forward to, we're only getting started.
Exactly. Yeah. We're only a year in or so.
Only a year old. We're a year old. And then a humble group of podcasters, also the Podcast Arcade, which is kind of the podcast arm of the Starfighters. And and you're one of the Podcast Arcadians now as well.
Exactly. I've been knighted.
We just got to get you all. We got to get you all the stuff.
Do I have to go on a crusade?
We got to go a crusade. You got to get branded. You got to brand you still.
Oh, no.
We have a goblet of grog. You got to drink in the full moonlight. We'll get you there.
We got to bite the head off a chicken or something like that.
Something like that, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Feats of strength.
Yes, cool.
I've been doing podcasts now since the fall of 2012.
Man.
And so we're coming up on...
8 years.
8 years now.
A lot has changed in 8 years.
Right? So, yeah, man. Love it. And I can't tell you how excited I am to talk about our topic
today. I'm glad you're back. And because you were on an episode a long time ago. It's been too long.
It's been way too long.
So I'll put a link in the show notes to how to get a hold of Eddie and the previous episode he was on.
Yeah.
But today we wanted to talk Star Trek.
Yes.
Because we were at an event and Eddie mentioned, I really like Star Trek, but on all of your different podcasts, you've really never done a whole lot of deep diving into that.
You never know it. It's like a dirty secret that I keep hidden.
It's a covert thing.
It's a covert nerd.
Yes. So when Eddie mentioned that, I'm like, well, let's... The whole podcast, at least for me anyway, is I want to talk to people that really nerd out about whatever, fill in the blank, whether it's Star Trek, Star Wars, whatever, and you mentioned that, so let's get into that. When did you first encounter Star Trek? Whether that was a comic book, TV show, whatever. When did you first see it?
Yeah. I was about 10 years old or so, and it was the summertime. It was like summer of 1987, so I wasn't quite 10 yet. And I always had kind of an eye towards science fiction. As a kid, I don't think I even had a word for it. You know, like I didn't quite associate it. Oh, that I like science fiction. I just knew what I liked. And so shows like Buck Rogers and the $6 Million Man.
Battlestar Galactica.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I was aware of the Star Trek motion picture because my dad watched it like all the time. And so I was exposed to like sci-fi paperback novels, all those things. And so for me, that was just kind of like they talked about a geek since birth, but that's kind of me. Sure. And so I remember coming across, it was they were doing a rerun of the original series, TOS, for the kids in the know. I was just watching, and they were all out of sequence. I don't think they were even in order.
They just replay them on TBS or whatever.
Exactly. And I was watching the original series, and I was just hooked by... And I said this before about like our generation. This is where we're getting to the age now where we get to say these kinds of things. Where we were seeing things that looked dated. And we knew they were dated, but our brain was still doing that leap. You know, we didn't need over the top effects.
Nope.
You could see the strings.
Oh, yes.
And you were still like, that's cool. Yeah. It's space bats, you know. I came across the original series on rerun and was just instantly hooked. You know, it wasn't even like a, oh, I wonder what this is about. I remember my first Star Trek episode was the one, I forget the exact title. This is like mega now. It was
Wave One.
It was Wave One.
Inside Mega Joke, season one.
And it was the one where Kirk was negotiating with these two alien races where they had the faces were black and white on opposite sides.
Okay.
And, of course, it was like an allegory for race relations in America at the time. But the idea behind it was that these two aliens couldn't get along. And Kirk's like, why can't you guys just kind of bridge the gap? And he's like, Kirk, can't you tell how different we are? And he's like, what do you mean? I don't see anything different. And they're like... He's white on one side of his face, and I'm white on the other side. We're clearly different. And he's like, okay, this is a problem. Anyway, that was my first episode. That and Tribbles.
I remember the Trouble with Tribbles.
I just loved it. I loved that it was like an adventure, but it also had a streak of humor in it. It wasn't afraid to be a little funny. Campy, I guess some people would call that. But... I liked that there were people on the ship. Once again, I didn't have the vernacular for it at the time, but I liked that there were people and aliens that were just different who worked together. There wasn't any, and if there was, they worked it out with each other, you know?
Was it, do you think, you mentioned campy and comedic. You thought it was campy and comedic in 87. Do you think people in 66, because it came out in 66, thought it was campy and comedic? I wonder.
I think on some level they did.
Okay.
Some of the, like even the cues in the show, like just they kind of not pause for laughter, but they were almost like especially when Kirk and Spock and McCoy had their kind of like interchanges and it was kind of a humorous exchange. It had the timing almost of a comedy bit. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So maybe that's just my interpretation of it, but my thought was I think that they took it as a little bit of camp. Definitely, they were like, oh, they're injecting humor into the story.
It came out in 66, and you were talking about how limited the special effects were.
Yeah.
But when I was thinking about this, in 66, TV had really only been out about 20 years.
Right.
Because in 1946 is when they came out with the new type of TV and it was after the war, everybody bought it.
So sure.
If you think about it, TV was essentially in its infancy.
A new medium, totally. And it's so funny to think because, like, so it came out in 66.
Yep.
And I saw it in 86, 87. So it was only 20 years from that.
Yeah.
Which is so funny. When you're a 9-year-old kid watching a TV show and someone says that's 20 years old, you think to yourself, that's old.
Yeah.
And then here we are now in our mid-40s, and it's like, you know, it's just crazy how those things just change.
Oh, the medium has changed so much. You were talking about podcasting. You've been podcasting for 8 years. Think about podcasting in 2012.
Still niche.
Very niche, very new. Okay, so let me back up. What grabbed you, I guess, that really drew you in and said, I'm going to watch this every time it's on? Because is that what happened?
It's tough. I think, at least for me, we were a military family growing up. I was a Navy brat and my entire life. It wasn't like, and then my dad retired when I was 10. No, man. Like, I grew up and moved out. My dad's still in the Navy, you know? So my entire existence, I grew up as a Navy kid. Seeing a fictionalized show about, like, the best version of, you know, they were a military kind of... Starfleet is basically
the
Navy, you know? And so... seeing a fictionalized version of the Navy, but I got to see the adventures and I got to see all the stuff. Not that I pictured my dad's life being like that, but it was kind of a neat fictionalization of what I felt like my life was. There's times I felt like I was on the Enterprise. In fact, my dad was on a carrier. I want to say it was the Kennedy. I don't think he was ever on the Enterprise.
That would have been cool.
That would have been awesome.
My dad's on the Enterprise.
I know, right? but he was an engineer. He was essentially Scotty. So yeah, exactly. He was the engine guy. He worked on the nuclear vessels.
Can you do your best, Scotty, Eddie?
I kind of do it. I kind of do it.
I'm giving it all she's got.
Captain. Oh, that's Chekhov. That's Chekhov. So I think part of that informed my excitement for the show.
Okay.
And also, like, anything in space. Space just fascinated me as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just stare at the night sky sometimes. So things that were set in a space environment, and not that space, if it's in space, you got me hooked. It was a multiple layers thing. It was in space. It kind of had a, oh, look, it's in, like a future Navy. And it had aliens like working on the crew. Like everything that I knew up until then, when you get into like, except for Star Wars, when you get into, and then even as a kid, my dad told me enough to know that Star Trek came before Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
He's like, Star Trek was ahead of Star Wars by 10 plus years. For me to see aliens that weren't depicted as like the enemy, like they were working with the humans, It was a neat, and granted they had that in Star Wars too, but Seeing all those things come together, and I kind of liked, and we're going to get into this probably, a little bit of the, you had to see how people worked through things. Every episode wasn't about, although in the original series, it kind of 50-50, it wasn't always fighting, but it was just kind of neat to see some of the interpersonal development of the characters, you know?
Conflict resolution.
Exactly. So as a kid, not all that vocabulary was there, but those things were enough to pull me in and just get me fascinated by the show. You know?
Well, speaking of, we talked about some characters there. Who was your favorite character then from the original series? Or do you have one?
I do, and I hate to be that guy that's like, the three of them. I really do love Spock of the three. Like, if I had to pick, like, of all the original crew, like, I love all the original crew. Sure. But, yeah, Spock's my guy. He's awesome.
Why Spock?
I like the idea of a conflicted character.
It's true, because he was half human, half Vulcan.
And it was a smart play on their part to kind of play that in. Because it made him alien enough that he was interesting, but it also grounded him that you could kind of understand where he's coming from.
Sure.
Kirk, and as I got older and got more aware of like Kirk as a person, and they kind of fleshed him out more in the movies too. Kirk always seemed like this brash captain that was going to either punch something, kiss it, or shoot it. And that was, you know,
right.
McCoy and that, I'm a country doctor. And I always thought that seemed like an odd, weird thing. Like, yeah. It was like, dude, you're in the future. Like,
yeah, how can 300 years in the future.
So. You keep saying you're a country doctor, but you work in the military. And
good point.
So for me, Spock was a guy that I could identify with more, not so much in the void of emotions, but this notion of kind of being in two worlds and just kind of feeling that way in a sense, you know.
Okay.
We moved around a lot as a kid, so for me it felt like I was in this world of the military.
Yeah,
there was some familiarity with that. But then whenever I had to go about my life as a kid, like go to school, it was always these new people. It was a very split kind of existence. So it was, when it came to Spock, I kind of could identify with
somebody. Gravitated towards him.
Oh, love Spock.
What about episodes then, or story arc? What did you really like? Your favorite story arc or episode from the
original
series?
I mean, it's hard because it's changed over time, right? Like, so my favorite story arc as a kid was probably the Tribbles, just because it was ludicrous, you know? And it had these fuzzy things that kind of just poured all over. And it was just funny. Looking back at it now, I like, and it's kind of a weird, they were still playing around with the storylines, but my favorite one is the Khan storyline.
Yes.
You know?
Khan Noonien Sung. Yes.
That, the close second is the one, I think it's called A Mock Time, maybe, the one where Spock goes into heat, basically, and has to go back to his planet and has to, like, fight, like, for mating rights.
Mating rights for one of the Vulcan girls.
And this conniving princess picks Kirk to be the guy he has to fight against. And I liked it because it just had this, like, it was a fusion of, like, you got to see more of his Vulcan culture. Mm-hmm. You got to see the planet Vulcan. It pitted him to fight against his best friend. And he was in kind of this weird, like, rut where he was, like, basically all, like,
I'm all merged.
And then somehow, like, and he had a great one-liner in it where he basically was like, the near killing of his best friend made him realize that it kind of dispelled all that stuff in his head.
Yeah.
And he told that girl basically to step off if she wasn't worth it. And I was like, oh, what a gangster. I love him. And so between the two, but Khan's probably my favorite storyline, not just because that they turned it into a movie later on.
No.
But the episode itself was like, dang, they just awakened something that they didn't know. You know, they were assuming the best. And it's kind of a warning in real life when you want to think about it. It's like, you got to be careful who you get close to.
Yeah.
So, but they wake up this whole crew of the USS Botany Bay.
Botany Bay,
Wake them up. They're in cryo sleep, and they wake them up, and they're like, hey, well, there are people
in the future. We should preface, there might be spoilers if you
spoilers
haven't seen
from
this 50-year-old
episode. 50-year-old episode.
Anyway,
shame on you.
Sorry.
And they wake them up. It turns out that they are basically super soldiers that were put in cryo sleep as a punishment. Like, forget these people. We're done. And
they were super genetically enhanced humans.
Genetically enhanced
in
humans.
In the 90s.
Yeah. During, like, some crazy war.
On eugenics
Earth.
War.
Yes.
Was.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so, which means, they're genetically perfected, you know. And between intellect and physical prowess, these are, like, the apex of what humans can be. Yeah, Khan stirred up some trouble at that point.
Yeah, they lost the war, and so they shot him into space and froze him, and then...
Yeah, and he led the rebellion and all that stuff.
Yeah, he led the whole rebellion. There's a book that talks about, called The Eugenics War.
Oh, nice.
That I read that talks about the whole background.
Oh, wow.
Basically goes through the eugenics war.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he's like from India, and that's where the secret lab was, where they created all enhanced humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good episode.
It's a great episode. And once again, this goes to the campy part. I mean, he's a perfected human, and it's still Kirk still manages to beat him down with a doorknob. And that's where I'm like, man, Kirk's a gangster. He'll snap a chair leg off and beat you down with a doorknob.
Oh, jeez.
But just the whole notion of that episode and Khan seducing or her falling in love with
one of
the Starfleet officers and requesting to go with him. I mean, that was a pretty heavy episode for what I remembered the original series to be. And then years later, they had the wisdom to basically springboard off that episode into a movie.
That was great. That was a great idea.
Such a great
go
idea.
Go grab one episode and say, hey, what if we did this?
What would happen after
they
the fact.
Found him, you know, what, 30 years later or whatever.
And we gave you a planet that we thought was going to be perfect, and it turned out to be a living hell.
We give you Ricardo Montalban in a fur vest, I guess.
That was amazing. Bare-chested, the deepest of V-necks.
Yes.
His neckline stopped at his belly button. It's like, yeah!
That's Eddie's Halloween costume.
I need that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Actually,
all of my costumes are either Prince Voltan or Khan. It's like very like homoerotic, but I'm cool with it. Whatever.
Yeah,
we'll do
whatever,
what we got to do.
Whatever cooks your cookie.
Or floats your boat.
So you saw in 86, 87.
Yeah.
And then tell us about seeing then the Next Generation. So Star Trek Next Generation came out in September of 87.
Yeah, so I was late to the party on Next Generation. So I saw the original series, and as a kid, it seemed like there was just hundreds of episodes available of the original series, and there's not. It was only on for two seasons.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it, kids. You thought there was more, and it canceled it. And so you can actually burn through the original series pretty quick.
Yeah.
There's not a lot.
No.
And so I, over a summer, watched pretty much, I think, all the original series episodes. I may have missed one or two, but I saw 99% of the original series. Then, if you remember, on Nickelodeon, they were showing reruns, again, of the Transformers, of the Star Trek cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, it was cool because it was the original actors voicing their characters. It wasn't
So William Shatner and everybody?
Yes.
Really?
I didn't
know that.
I am fairly confident that that is true. I'm going to lean into this one. I believe it's 100% true that the original voices were done by the original actors.
Awesome.
There was at least one new character they made at the helm. And I might be wrong here because I know Sulu was in the cartoon. It might have been Chekhov who wasn't in the cartoon, and they made this like weird alien guy to replace Chekhov, and he was just some weird like reptile looking. But someone said this, and I was like, oh, I didn't think about this. The cartoon was able to do more effects wise because it's animated, and it kind of kept Star Trek in people's brains during that lack of live episodes.
Yeah, because the cartoon came out after the TV series, but before the movie.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I got it. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
And then I had also seen Star Trek, the motion picture. And between that time, this is all before the Next Generation. I had seen the motion picture. And then I ended up, then at that point, I was like, the hooks are in, dude.
Yeah.
I saw the motion picture. I saw Star Trek II, the search. No, not Search for Fox. Star Trek II was Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan. Yep.
Three was A Search for Spock. Four was Voyage Home. And then five was the
Final Frontier.
Six is Undiscovered Country. Yes. I read the book before I saw the movie. One of those another things.
Awesome.
But so I'm in deep.
Holy cow. So you had about 6 months where you're just like.
Well, no. Because this is over the years now.
So, in
that time frame of me like being aware, like all before this, I'd been fed a diet of Star Trek, right?
Okay.
And so Star Trek Six, The Undiscovered Country, came out, I think, at the same time. During that time, Next Generation is on the air.
Yes.
So that movie is airing at the same time there's a TV show of Star Trek The Next Generation. So The Next Generation, even though it came out in 87, I didn't land on it until like 88-ish, somewhere like that. I was 11, maybe even almost 12, when I became aware of The Next Generation.
Sure.
And yeah, I was 88, so it's been out for a year. I was in love. I was in love. So they had already had a year or so of shows done.
Shows, yep.
So I came into it on season two. And then once again, the gift of syndication, I got to see, I caught up with all of season one. So I've seen season two, I caught up on season one. Not going to lie, the rough seasons looking back.
Yeah.
And then I was right ready for season three. From season three on, I was on the bus.
You're hooked.
I was hooked. I didn't miss it every night. It was not every night. Every time it was on TV. Most every time I watched The Next Generation.
Your thought was, this is my Star Trek.
Exactly.
The original series, that was my dad's.
Yep.
This is mine.
Yep. Everything before was cool, but I was catching up on a diet of things that were made before me, you know? And these characters even felt like characters that were kind of written for my parents in a way. And so then seeing The Next Generation, and someone even said, like, that was a very 90s version of what we thought the future was going to be like.
It is.
Yeah. And so, but I was just right in, man. Like, everything from the way the ship looked to the way the bridge looked to the, I'm just going to be honest, the gorgeous ladies that were part of this.
Yes.
I was in it 100% as a preteen or early teen. The characters were amazing. I thought William Riker, man, every young boy wanted to be William Riker.
So that Spock was favorite from the original series. Is Riker your favorite from Next Generation?
Next Generation so much more difficult for me because I was getting into being a teenager at that point, so I could see. They became less archetypal to me, and I could see like their good points and their bad points.
Yeah.
So it got to be harder for me to be like, my favorite character is this guy, you know? Okay. If you like sat me down and were like, who is pound for pound your favorite character? Like who would you like drop what you're doing to go, you know, see what you're, I'm going to have to say it's either Picard or Worf.
Worf. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Worf, and almost for the same reasons as I love Spock. He's kind of a conflicted character. He's full Klingon, but he was raised by humans.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah. That was always the conflict in the show.
Culturally, he was.
Because the Klingons would make fun of him. Like, you're raised by
humans. He's weak.
And you're weak.
Yeah, you're weak.
Yeah.
And if anybody knows Worf, man, he's not weak at all.
The guy that played him, let's see.
Michael Dorn.
Michael Dorn. Okay, funny story. Will Wheaton, in his biography, talks about when they were filming Star Trek The Next Generation, across the lot, just they could see it. They were filming probably Undiscovered Country or one of the movies.
Yep.
He's like, hey, I want to meet Captain Kirk. You know, this would be great.
Yeah.
And so he walks over there. Hey, I'm Will Wheaton. I play Crusher on Next Generation. A real big fan. And he dissed him. He said, hey, I wouldn't let a kid on my bridge. And like totally dissed him. And Will Wheaton was just crushed.
William Shatner said, I would not allow a child on my bridge.
Yeah.
Wow.
So funny story, he went back and he was upset. Sad.
And he's a kid at the time.
Yeah, and he told Michael Dorn, and Michael Dorn said, you want me to go over there and beat him up?
I'll go beat up William Shatner. Yeah, exactly.
So now, from now on, Will Wheaton refers to William Shatner as William Shatner.
Shatner. No.
So in everything you see written or he talks about him, that's what he refers to.
He does not give him.
Because he just crapped all over my idol.
That's a rough.
Idol.
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's
anyway. Tough.
That's a lesson. That's a lesson. Don't meet your heroes sometimes.
Maybe
don't hold your heroes in too high regard.
It's hard, man. Those guys are people.
But you anyway, gonna... so Worf's your guy.
Yeah, so it's a toss up. And then I'll be honest, and he's not a hero in Star Trek. Well, he kind of is, actually, depending on how you want to look at him. I love Q.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, played by John Lacey.
Oh, yeah.
Love
great
Q.
Character that they just speckle throughout the whole series.
He's so good.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching it. So, funny story, when I first, it came out in September 26th of 87.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I remember that is because I was in, I think it was a freshman in high school or eighth grade. Anyway, we got sick because the cafeteria food at school was poisoned.
Poisoning
from cafeteria.
Oh.
So, I'm laying on the couch just sick as a dog. My brother's sick. They had to call off the football game because more than half the team was
poisoned.
It was a Friday night. Was suffering from food poisoning.
That's next level.
And so I'm sitting on the couch and hey, there's a Star Trek series starting. Okay, fine, I'll watch it. I'm sick. I have nothing else to do. Yeah, except keep my bucket nearby.
So you saw Encounter at Farpoint part one when you were Ralph and your guts up.
Yep.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's the best.
Yeah, that's the best.
My vivid memory of it was, so I'd seen season two and then I went back, and season two was, anybody will agree, it's a rough season. It's just rough. And then I went back and it was the summer. Now I remember it was the summer of 88 when they were showing the reruns of season one. And I saw Encounter at Farpoint 1 and 2 back to back.
Ooh, nice.
They aired them back to back. And back to back, it's like a movie, you know, because they're 2 hour long episodes.
2 hours.
Yeah, hour and a half with, 45 minutes each episode. Even though it's a rough, it's a season or series premiere, it was an ambitious premiere. And you get to meet Q and all this stuff. And the space station is not what it appears to be and all these things. And that episode was what probably was instrumental in sinking the hooks in as deep as it did. Because I was just on the bus since then.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about, and we talked about this earlier, what about the whole concept of the original series, Next Generation? Of course, we got many other series, and I don't know if we'll have time to get to all of them.
Yeah, right.
But what is the difference maybe between the original series and Next Generation? Or do they have a lot of similarities, I guess, philosophically, or that whole concept of, like you said, they really tried to deal with race in the first series?
The current thread, at least, that I take away from Star Trek, and this is where, like, people, you look at anything like a prism, and you're going to see a different thing in it, And Star Trek, just like anything that's, fiction, people can take out of it what they want. And what I took out of Star Trek, they do differ. I mean, Star Trek, the original series, I mean, Gene Roddenberry said it. He considered it a wagon train to the stars. Like, he liked it. It was almost like a Western that was filmed in space. And we've seen shows like Firefly and other things that kind of try to embody that feeling. They didn't do that with Star Trek, where they were like making them country, where they had, except for the McCoy in some weird way, but they didn't have them wearing like dusters and say things like y'all. They, it was very much in the future, but the way they handled some stuff was kind of typical of an adventure series in the 60s. Kirk doing the double fisted,
the
classic.
The hammer. The hammer.
He's going to break your face. And so with Star Trek The Next Generation, what you got out of it was there was action still in the show, but what was happening was it was more of their reaction to it and how to steer around stuff like that, like physical confrontation. What I got out of it was there was less Picard, and the whole notion of the Next Generation was they almost evolved beyond physical. They had torpedoes and phasers still, but the idea was that they were looking for peaceful solutions to problems first. And a lot of people hear that and are like, that sounds boring. But it really wasn't, because it gets into like the culture differences, how we resolve these things. What do we do? Or do we just agree to disagree? Things like that. I mean, in a way, it felt almost like a more of a thinking show to me, at least.
The first series or second?
Next Generation.
Okay.
Picard, I thought, was a much more thoughtful captain.
You couldn't have casted him better.
No. They struck gold with him. And so the current thread, and this is where a lot of people who like Star Trek kind of get into fights, I think no matter whether it's the movies or even if it's the current Picard series, there is a common thread through all of these series. And it's either the future is a good future. Like, there's a positive story here. It's not like there's an apocalypse. We did emerge from, you know, the whole like warp drive, the eugenics wars.
Yes.
There was this pocket in humanity where we had to kind of overcome this negativity, but that the future is positive. And even in the Picard series, you can tell like Starfleet is kind of like corrupt in a way.
Little rogue.
And Picard resigned because of it. He's like, I'm not going to be a part of an organization that does this. But what I like about it is even within that, Starfleet might be corrupt, but Picard and these people are not. They're fighting for an ideal that they still believe in. And so for me, Star Trek has been a very like positive story.
Sure.
That's what I think the unifying thread is.
Unifying thread is all positive through for the most part.
Even within the negativity, Deep Space Nine is a great example of a Star Trek story that's not happy. It's not born out of happiness. Sisko is a captain who's pissed. He's a mad guy. And I remember one episode where he's trying to get these aliens to have some hostages or something. And he was, and this is where I'm a little less savvy to DS9.
Sure.
I love DS9, but I didn't get to watch it as much as I wanted. We moved in between that. And I was there when they moved Worf over to Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
There was a hostage situation from some rogue Starfleet people who broke off and did their own thing. And he's basically negotiating with them. They're not budging. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to ruin the planet you guys are on. And starts like just shooting these photon torpedoes into the planet that are like equipped with some weird warhead that are like destroying their atmosphere. And they're like, you're going to kill us all. And he's like, yeah, I guess I am. Boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, wow, he's different.
Whoa, he's dark.
He's angry.
He went there.
Yeah, I mean, his first episode of DS9, I remember him yelling at Picard because, I mean, he blamed Picard because he was turned into Locutus by the Borg.
Yeah, that's right.
For blowing the ship up that his wife was a captain on.
Ooh.
Yeah, or first officer. But yeah, she got killed in that exchange with the Borg. And so Sisko blamed Picard for that whole mess.
I remember that was kind of a unique thing. They had the crossover
between
those two universes, Deep Space Nine and Next Generation.
Because they were running two Star Trek series at the same time.
That's how popular it went that they could do that.
Which they're doing now with Discovery and Picard.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, back to Next Generation, the question I thought of, we talked about favorite episode or story arcs in original series. What about Next Generation? What's the one that's one or two that really stick out that I love that one? Or if you're flipping through channels and you see that one, you're like, ooh, I'm stopping there.
Oh, well, I have an all-time favorite episode.
Okay.
There's one episode that's self-contained. They reference the events in it, how it changed Picard a little bit. But it was called The Inner Light.
Okay.
And that's an episode where they encounter a beacon that's just in space, just floating around. It's not even near a star system. They're like, that's weird.
Okay.
And it's essentially a satellite. And they scan it. And upon scanning it, it basically scans back at them.
Okay.
And in doing so, latches onto the captain somehow and puts him into a state of essentially like a coma. Like he is out and they can't wake him up.
Okay.
And they start to cut the beam from that probe. Like, all right, shut that thing off. Get it off of us. They do. And it starts to kill the captain. He starts to die. And they're like, whoa. So they turn the beam back on and he stabilizes. And they're like, okay, so whatever is happening here, this thing is going to do what it's got to do.
Okay.
And it seemed like he was fine, like on there. So then it cuts to his perspective. He wakes up from a nap. He's in like some like peasant clothes and he's like on a countryside picnic and with this, you know, pretty brunette lady. And she's like, oh, and I forget his name now. Oh, so-and-so, it's not Picard. And he's like, where am I? And she's like referencing him as this other name.
Okay.
Oh, so-and-so, you had a... Oh, he woke up being sick in bed. And she's like, oh, your fever broke. And he's like, what's going on? And they're like, oh, you were sick for days and you hallucinated. And he's telling them, like, my name is Jean-Luc Picard. I'm a captain. And they're like, that fever was really bad. It messed with your brain. And he's like, I don't belong here. And they're like, well, this sickness is what's causing you to think this way. Days, weeks, months, years go by.
Okay.
And he's finally at a point in his life where he's like, I think I dreamed this whole starship up.
Okay.
I don't think that was real. This is my life. This is my life. And he's lived in this for years. He's now, he goes into it with his current age, you know, late 40s, early 50s. And he essentially, dies in this life. And in that life, they had kids. Kids grew up. They had kids. He becomes a grandparent. In that exchange, he figures out the planet is experiencing like just death on their crops. They can't get anything to grow.
Sure.
And he's like, the sun is cooking, killing everything. The soil's dead. He's like, our UV stuff is not, you know, our planet's not protected. We got to make efforts to fix this. And they're like, oh, you silly farmer, just do what you're supposed to do. They ignore him. After years of him committing to this and being like, no, this planet's having some issues, they pull him off to the side and they go, we know. Basically, the sun is going unstable and it's going to blow up. Okay. And we don't have the technology to get everybody off the planet. Like, nor do we have the technology to sustain a handful of colonists for any long period of time. So basically, we're screwed.
Okay.
There's an initiative on this planet to take memories from people and a person and put them on this probe we're going to launch into space. And hopefully someone in the future will know who we were. And then he stops for a second, and then all the people in his life, who he's lived now here for 50, 60 years, showing up, his wife, his all people in this, and they're like, this is basically a memory that you've lived, someone else's life. And then it cuts, the beam terminates, he wakes up on the Enterprise, stands up, and he's like, how long was I out? And they were like, 5, maybe 10 minutes.
Wow.
And he was like, he just lived an entire life.
In 5 minutes.
And it's called The Inner Light. And the sad part about it was like he experienced an entire lifetime.
Sure.
Was in love and had kids. And in the dream or in the state, in that world, he had a flute and he wanted to try to play. He was stuck there anyway.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting off that planet. He had this flute and he didn't know how to play. Over the years, he kept playing it. And by the end, he was really gifted at playing the flute. And so he was playing full concerts and people would come and attend. And it was all very like, what's the word? Like idyllic, where people were like all drinking wine and like, yay.
Very posh.
Exactly. He's playing the flute, you know, well, and people like it. And then so he went into this, Picard went in, not being able to play the flute, comes out of it.
Uh-huh.
Can fully play the flute.
Because even after 5 minutes.
He learned that skill. Even though he was asleep, he technically honed it over decades.
Wow.
And so, and the flute was, they found one thing inside that probe, and it was the flute.
It was the flute.
And they're like, I think this is something that has some relevance. And he's like, it does. And he didn't tell anybody what he went through. I think later on maybe he did, and it just, the episode closes with him playing the flute. It is so like heart-wrenching.
Yes. So who comes up with that?
Right. So it's actually based off of a loose story that was kind of Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, yeah.
But also there's a story. Rip Van Winkle was off of a story. It was a French story of this guy that falls asleep by a tree and then has a dream where he lives an entire life and then wakes up to realize that he didn't. So they kind of took those old folk tales and did a retelling of it. But one of my favorite episodes. Sorry, you didn't ask for a full breakdown, but give it some context.
Maybe you'll know this episode, and I'll briefly, one that I remember, I think it was from season one, but they have these symbiotes, these little, I don't know, what do you call them?
Little nanobot things?
They're like, they almost look like a scorpion.
Oh.
And they take over the Federation.
Yes.
I think it's a season one.
Season one or
really
season two?
Bizarre.
Yeah.
And they shoot the guy with the phaser and he blows up and this big lizard thing comes out of him.
Yes.
But if you remember at the very end, the symbiotes send out a signal.
Yeah.
And nobody ever knows what happened.
To my knowledge, they've never returned to that.
So that's one they could kind of like a con thing.
Yeah.
They could totally go back to that.
Right.
The signal finally got to the home world and we're sending in an armada. But that one was really weird. But especially as a kid, you're like, these things crawl in their mouth and
it was almost
attached to them.
It was almost a horror movie.
Yeah.
I remember they came in these, like, it was like a bowl of like larva.
Yeah.
And they were like,
they would eat them.
And you're like, ooh, that's kind of weird.
And Riker pretends to be taken over by him and then zaps everybody.
Yeah, yeah. One of the guys, like, turns his head and one, like, crawls in his mouth.
Yes, that was the king or queen.
Yeah, and then they shoot him. And you can see, like, his, like, exposed ribs.
And this was on network television.
Yeah! Dude, the 80s were bonkers. They were
really pushing it. But, you know, speaking of pushing it, though, if you go back to the original series, and we can talk about the philosophy behind this, but having an African-American woman on the deck, you had a Russian on the Enterprise, You had, then, like I said, they had Aliens on there. I mean, that, for 1966, that was pretty radical.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kirk and Uhura kissed. Yeah. That was like the first interracial kiss on TV. Really? Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, yeah, he kissed her.
That was really pushing the envelope.
Gene Roddenberry was not hiding his mission.
Well, I think even the what we saw on TV was actually tamed down from what he really wanted to do.
I think so.
I remember reading some articles about that. It was a lot more risque and a lot more pushing the envelope. Well, even the pilot, if you've watched the original pilot, where it's the captain Pike. Is a female.
No, it's Captain Pike. And the first officer was female.
Maybe that was it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. And that first episode was the pilot, and there was no Captain Kirk.
No.
And Spock was there still. I don't remember if he even had Vulcan ears, though. I think he had the haircut, but no ears.
Okay.
And that pilot was shown like after, like the way they showed the syndication, at least, was I saw all this stuff. And then the very end, they showed the pilot of the original.
Yeah. And you're like,
and I was like, what the heck is even this, dude? But it's still a great episode. Those aliens with the pulsing brains, where they keep them. That's that whole, what was that even called? Something the cage or something.
Yeah,
like
the cage. And I remember reading an article
called the cage.
I remember reading an article about that. That whole thing, they had to tame it down quite a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's like torturing or something going on. It was pretty risque.
Oh, they had like slave girls.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was some next level stuff. I mean, and the 60s were already kind of like they were getting into that. Some more risque content. But he was pushing the envelope for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with the diversity stuff. And this is where like people are so funny because like we take a lot, and this is where I get a little philosophical maybe.
That's fine.
People get all oddly weird now where it's like, it feels weird when you force it in the story. I think you're the one that feels like it's forced. You know what I mean? What does forcing it mean? I think it's forcing it, and maybe what people say when they mean it is when they take a character who's existing and they change the ethnicity or the gender of that character. Yeah. Maybe that's what they're getting at.
I think so.
But my point is I've still seen complaints when you even have authentic new characters. I mean, Discovery is a great example. The lead character in that is an African-American woman, and she is killer. She is amazing. I've only seen a handful of Discovery episodes. I don't get what the fuss is about. I mean, I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan. And Trek, I've even said this. I go, Star Trek The Next Generation is very different than the original series.
Oh, yeah.
There's the unifying thing of positivity, yes.
Yes.
But the way they go about different things, how different things are resolved, even to the extent of like the Klingons were bad in this one. They were like bad guys. Bad guys.
Yep.
The 60s never went into the what if the Klingons were good. They never did that.
Nope.
The Romulans, bad guys. They're like Vulcans, but they're bad. And then Next Generation was like, hey, guess what? We worked out our difficulties with the Klingons. Not only do we work them out, they help us with stuff, and we even have one on the bridge. And Romulans, one of the big storylines in The Next Generation, which they actually touch on with Picard, is Picard, along with Spock, towards the end of the Next Generation series, one of the big storylines was reunification, they kept calling it that.
That's right.
Was bringing the Vulcans and the Romulans back together because they were essentially one race, and there was a division philosophically between the two cultures that were like, they believed emotions were their downfall. Romulans believed that emotions were good and should be embraced. And so they were like, well, we disagree. We're going to split. Okay, cool. And so with Next Generation, what you saw was more about like, we need to fix these things and figure out how to fix these splits between different, you know,
different races and cultures.
And I really dug that quite a bit.
I like how they took some of those old prejudices from the original series.
Yeah.
Tried to mend those, but in the same time, then they bring on new enemies, so to speak, with the Borg and some of this other stuff that they tried to do. So
what's so cool? Yeah, dude, totally. And what's so cool is they didn't get, it wasn't a tired premise because the Klingons were this warlike culture.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to take your stuff, you know? And there's a lot of allegory, I think, for the time, too, with the Cold War. And they're like Russians and we're, you know, not. And then what I liked about Next Generation was when they dealt with conflict, it was either beings kind of like Q, where it was like, oh, my God, like a reminder that like we're evolutionarily are pretty small. Or it was like the Ferengi, which weren't a warlike culture. They were their whole economic system was weird and different, and like stealing to them was okay. Yes. And it's like, wow, how do I even work with this? And so they didn't have to go through the tired trope of like bad guy likes to blow stuff up. In a lot of cases, the bad guys, air quotes, were just so different that you had no idea how to work with them.
Couldn't deal with them because like, I have no idea. Yeah, you're totally off my radar.
Yeah. I mean, the Ferengi weren't opposed to stirring like conflict, but they tried to kind of get around it first and try to like bamboozle, you know,
yeah.
and steal. And
what was their currency?
Oh, I forget. They are talking like credits.
It was liquid something.
I don't remember. Wow. I just remember there's like the Ferengi, the Ferengi rules of acquisition or something like that. There's like a long list of like,
yeah.
Like if you can get something by stealing it, then do it that way.
They would just do it. And yeah. there was always, but it was a liquid something.
Though. Yeah, I don't know. That's a
Trek
good point.
Fans out there are probably like, hey, you idiot.
Dummies.
Don't know what that is.
But I just, that was one of the bigger things that I liked was that they did bring conflict, but a lot of the conflict was even with Voyager. I mean, yeah. there was that, what was that, that's offshoot of Starfleet off or
the dark, are you talking about?
And, like, and he became her first chief, Chakotay. That yes. was her first Chakotay, officer,
yes, yeah,
but he was like a. He was like a legit Native American. Was that
yes.
the idea?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
But like that was a whole separate thing aside from he joined this like splinter group that tried to rebel against Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
And what were they called?
X-23. Oh, no, X-23.
That's, I forget. This is where we fall
Wolverine.
Apart. But he was like blacklisted. He's like, yeah. this guy tried to lead a revolt against Starfleet. And even in Voyager, I mean, Voyager turned things on its head. You have a female captain.
Yeah.
And I mean, so for me, Voyager came at a weird time because it was like what? Like the mid-90s at that point? 93,
no, I thought
94?
It was a little bit later, but I could be
Might have been even later. I thought it was like 93, 94.
No, I think Voyager was... I thought that was 2000s.
Oh,
that
I
could be
know.
Wrong.
I thought I could swear it was
the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine,
Voyager.
But there might have been a gap.
I thought Voyager and DS9 were on synonymously too.
I could be wrong.
My remembrance was Next Generation. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I'll just rap while you look it up. I remembered DS9 and Next Generation running concurrently. You know, like they were, but Star Trek: The Next Generation was done after 7 seasons.
Yeah, they went a long time.
Yeah, 7 seasons, and they got to write the show to an end. They weren't
yes.
canceled. They chose to be done.
It. Yeah.
Yes, and I loved that.
I like that concept.
Yes.
You know, we're not just going to keep running this into the ground.
Nope.
Until we get enough out of it.
Yep.
It
was... And that. Yeah, and that episode was amazing too. All good things.
Okay. Yeah, I love that they play the card game.
And then I thought my mindset was so DS9 was still going, but that's when they introduced Voyager. At the same time.
So Voyager was January 16th, 1995.
Yeah. So it was
and
like mid
ran out in 2001.
Okay. So, yeah. so it had a good run though too.
Yeah. 7 seasons too.
Yeah. So Voyager was tough for me because Voyager started coming out when I was graduating high school.
Okay.
I was so busy and anybody who knows,
yeah. Yeah.
like I was working a full-time job, going to school for full-time. Like I just did not have time.
All your girlfriends.
All the women, you know, so many women, but I just didn't have the time to sit down and watch Voyager.
Yeah.
And this is right on the time of like, we still had VHS tapes.
Yes.
We didn't have TiVo or anything
nope.
like that yet, and so the notion of catching up on it was just not
no.
on my thing.
You had to record it,
yeah,
set your VCR and hope you got it right,
yeah,
or you had to catch it the next time it was on.
And so I was so off the bus with Voyager, but I was still aware of the characters.
Yeah.
You have Captain Janeway, Tuvok, and then start to kind of break Chakotay. But things start to break down for me after
yeah.
that. But once again, when I was aware of with it was still carrying on with that Star Trek legacy of like, you know,
kind of positivity, exploration.
Well, I mean, they got blasted out. Into an entirely different part of the galaxy
universe,
or even universe, I think.
It was 76,000 light years from,
yeah,
the
from
nearest
Earth.
Federation space,
yeah.
something like that. It was like, way out there.
Like going at warp 10, it would still take them like 5,000 years
something
to get
like
home.
That.
Or
it
something
was ridiculous.
Like that. And they didn't have the tech, they didn't have like cryogenic stuff. There wasn't even part of the like solution, and there was no Q that was going to send them. I think maybe Q did show up,
oh,
but
yeah.
he didn't
yeah.
help them in that sense.
No.
He's like, because
nope. he could have transported the ship
instantly
back to Earth.
And I just remembered like the concept of that being something else. And I'm like, that's amazing because you would just fly your ship into a moon, be like, oh, we're all going to die, so
yeah.
we may as well just give up. And for them, it's like, nope, we're going home. We don't know how we're going to. to figure this out. And the idea that they were that far away in space removed them from all tethers of like, you know, and they still chose to do their mission. They're like, well, we're in a whole different part of space.
They could have just said, screw this. We're going to
may as well start mapping stuff.
Find a planet and just hang out there until we die.
Exactly. Find a heaven planet and call it good. What I liked about Voyager, the concept was, and this is where the one thing I think is a kind of a weak spot with Star Trek, and they've leaned into it hard. They had to with the whole like Kelvin timeline, is time travel. They played with time travel so much. That's the one thing that drives me a little bit crazy.
Okay. To me, too much?
Too much.
Yeah.
Too much.
You have the challenge of, say, it's Deep Space Nine and Voyager of... So Deep Space Nine, kind of your antagonists have to come to you.
Yep. You're a space station.
It's a space station.
Yep.
Voyager, I have to somehow keep this ship intact for 7 years.
Yeah. And that's...
Because I can't... with Next Generation and with the original series, you could always, well, we'll just get back to Earth or the nearest port and get
they went back to Earth sometimes
and get a new ship and we're okay.
Right.
So that's the challenge, I think, with Voyager and Deep Space Nine is with writing.
Yeah.
Really, you're kind of in a little bit of a pocket with both of those.
You are. Where do you go?
The original series or Next Generation, not really. You got a lot more flexibility.
Yeah. It really wasn't, I mean, Q played with like timeline stuff all the time, but it was never like so big and far reaching that it changed Star Trek.
No,
it was my experience of it was Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, was the first real like, we're going to change the events here by changing time.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go back, which I still defend. I love that movie.
You like The Voyage Home?
Yeah, the whales.
I liked it.
Get out of here.
Fine. Yeah. The whales?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Some people really dog on it.
But I don't get it.
Kind of fun.
I love it. I saw a great article. It was like, so humpback whales in the 80s had dwindled down to like 450 worldwide. Okay. And now I think right now it's somewhere like 30,000, 40,000.
Dramatically higher.
Yeah. And it was like, Star Trek guys did it.
Yeah. I love that.
That was my experience with the first real like Star Trek really getting into like, we're going to travel through time and change things.
Yeah.
And then it happened. They didn't mess with it again. Not in four. Not in five or six. They all stayed within their time. I love the whole Star Trek V though. What does God need with the starship?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. People wham on that one too. And I'm like, I kind of like that one.
I kind of like that one too.
Because they're kind of on the fence of whether this is God or not.
Yeah.
And Kirk's like, man, go to hell. Yes. Yeah. he just won't be stopped. But it was like effectively the first Star Trek. I mean, so Star Trek, I think it was Generations when they traveled through time because the Borg were just ripping them apart and they went back to find the guy who literally invented warp drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so they did some time travel there.
I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then with the new wave of Star Trek movies, that was where things got cattywampus.
Yeah, they really screwed up. Screwed with stuff.
You know, I said this and I still stand by it. Is like, listen, they did what they chose to do, and the keeper of the kingdom said, go for it. But when you now
it's
have
fine, it's two, just they, like you said, they really played with the time.
Yeah.
Time travel.
They didn't want to make a new Star Trek again.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to be a series. So they wanted to somehow tell a story again, and they'd told a ton of Next Generation movies. They were all, I said, it's funny to me, aside from Generations, all the other Star Trek, the Next Generation movies are kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And the last one, Nemesis.
Nemesis, yeah.
Wasn't that good in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think I even saw it.
That was where they have a Star Trek, it was like Star Trek, a clone of Picard.
Oh.
Who was actually a young, what's his name? The guy who played Bane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God, people are going to kill us so much.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But that guy played a clone of Picard raised by, like, I think a rogue group of Romulans, I want to say. But the movies, they had to, in their mind, I think, tell a story with characters that people already knew, but they didn't want to tell a story with the Next Generation crew. So they went back and said, we need to tell them with the original cast, but we're going to basically cast younger people. And the way to do that is we're going to have another timeline. And I was kind of like,
okay.
But I do like the movies.
They are. They're entertaining.
I love all three of them.
They're entertaining.
The second one, I think, is the weakest one in the bunch. Okay, I really do. Yeah. It's basically Star Trek 2.
Yeah.
Redone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I remember even Spock, he was on there. Like,
well, they just flopped it. And that was the part.
I don't know. Of course, you have Benedict Cumberbatch and you have the whole the Dark Federation, the undercover Federation, yeah, making these weapons.
Yep. So, I did. But, yeah. The part I did like was that you got to see. So one thing that I liked about Vulcans too was that, like, it's not highlighted a bunch, but that they're like twice as strong or 2.5 times yeah, stronger than a normal human.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to win a fist fight with a Vulcan.
No.
You know? And so they're even, I think they're even stronger than Klingons.
Oh, really?
Or they're comparable to Klingons, okay, in their strength. But they're so chill that you wouldn't...
They would never get in a fight.
You wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
And you see Spock literally give in to his human side. And he just chases down Khan and yeah, beats the poop out of him.
Wails on
and
him.
I'm like, I kind of love that.
Yes. And then Uhura comes in and kind of helps
him
out.
Stop, you're going to kill him.
Yeah. He's like,
yes.
He's like, he just keeps punching him.
Oh, he's just opening him up. I'm like, do it. Do it, Spock. Kill him. Spock's way better than me. I would have killed him.
Yeah.
So I'm a little mixed because, okay, I didn't, and I have a friend who, not a friend, but an old acquaintance who was like, the minute they blew up Vulcan, he was like, I'm done. This
got
is not Star Trek.
Walked out.
He got out of the theater, stood, whoa, up and walked out. Was like, wow, that's not Star Trek. I don't care what they call this. It's not Star Trek. And my point to him was, it is Star Trek. It's just a parallel
universe
that you don't like. And that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, go for it.
Speaking of Vulcans and Klingons, do you know any Star Trek languages?
I don't. I toyed around with getting the Klingon dictionary years ago. And I was actually at the time, I was in high school, I think, because I was in so deep. Y'all don't understand. So I, at that point, was so in love with Star Trek. I was getting it any way I could. So,
okay,
the TV show was only once a week. Comic book stores, I wasn't allowed to go to because men have mustaches. There's men with mustaches in there. So we would go to the Base Exchange, or the BX if you're a military in the know. Oh,
okay.
And the Base Exchange, depending on where you're at in the country, some are really nice, some are really crappy. I've been in all kinds, but the one we were at in Virginia was a nice one. And the Base Exchange there,
is it a store?
It's a store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like,
okay,
a, it's like a Target, but okay, it's all set, it's on the military base.
Okay.
The one that we went to had a book section. And so I'd run over to the book section and see what was new. And they never carried like old stuff. They had, you know, like big, like Stephen King, sure, books, stuff like that. But you couldn't like, but they'd always like have newer serial books. So Star Trek paperback novels,
yeah,
they had.
Okay.
And they always had like the newer ones. So those are serialized, you know, you can, yeah, keep up and, you know, Star Trek number so-and-so, number so-and-so. Yeah. And so I got hooked on those paperback novels, and I would mow lawns. That was my whole like scheme. Oh. My parents weren't buying me nothing.
Okay.
It was never like, Dad, can I have $5 to buy a book? And it was like, no.
I understand.
That was easy. So I was like, I'm gonna mow lawns, get money, buy Star Trek books. And that was my whole...
That's awesome. That was it. You can't get any nerdier than that.
Right? So I would literally... I had a block of neighbors and these books. I was playing catch up because I came in, yeah, and it was like number... I don't want to say it was like number 12 or 13 was out. So I went back, was catching up that way, and then just kept getting
That's
books.
Awesome.
And then it got to a point where I had so many books, and I kind of regret this, but it is what it is. I was using the books to fund new books. So I would take my books, and then we had like a paperback trade type store where they would just give you money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go in, sell my books. It was almost like a 3-to-1 though. Like,
yeah, I know. They're not going to give you much.
No. So I'd go in like three to six books, and I could buy 2 new ones. So anyway, the thing became self-sustaining more or less. And then whenever I had like a birthday, or my mom was big on Easter, she wouldn't get a bunch of candy, she would get you like a practical gift.
Okay.
Like when we got older, when you were little, it was like a stuffed animal or, yeah, something. But when you were older, it would be like a book. Or she was all big, like, you can get a book. I'll encourage the reading.
Okay, good.
And so I was like, all right, I'm going for the stars. I asked for like hardback.
Ooh.
Star Trek books. Yeah. And there was one called a hardback one that was called Fortune's Light, I want to say. And another one was basically, oh yeah, the one I love the most. I still need to get this.
Do you still have these?
I have them somewhere. I gotta dig them out somewhere. I think I have an idea where they might be. The book called Imzadi.
Imzadi.
Which is the word that Betazoids use, which is what Deanna Troi is half of.
Oh, yeah.
Half Betazoid, half human. It's a word they use in their culture for basically like, you're my soul lover, or you're my soul Mzadi.
So tell your wife that Mzadi.
She is, yeah. she'd be like, you're a nerd. I'm like, yes, yes I am. So she called Riker that, like, you're my Mzadi. And so she still called him that. And in fact, episode one of the Next Generation, when Riker, the beardless Riker, with his butt chin, comes in on the comes in on the turbo lift, and she sees him mentally, telepathically, she communicates with him, and she's like, "Hey, Mzadi, how are you?" And he's like, "Oh snap, she called me that word."
You're like, "What?"
So this book basically is like a what happens with them in the future kind of thing. And that's the one thing I did like. You say concurrent storylines. I like the romance between those two.
Okay.
I like that in Picard, they end up together. Thank goodness.
Yes.
You know, spoiler alert on that one. But the teasers have shown that.
Well, they've, and even in, I think, towards the end of the Next Generation, they got married anyway.
I think so.
So now these books, were they all original series Star Trek, or were they Next Generation then?
There was actually two.
So there's two.
Yeah. Okay. And then with the other series, they had those two.
They got,
you know, I couldn't, and at that point when they were doing, like, so I read a couple of original series books.
Yeah.
And I liked them. I didn't love them. I went back to Next Generation, and I was like, that's what convinced me. Like, okay, this is my Trek, you know? And then they had DS9 and Voyager books. And at that point, I'm like, I can't keep up with all this.
Oh, that's so many.
I have so much to do.
That's a lot of lawns to mow.
It's so many lawns. I can't do it. It's so only
Eddie's,
one
meeting. Eddie's out mowing lawns like, oh, are you saving up to buy a car or a bike? Like, nope, I'm buying Star Trek books.
Star Trek books, you chumps. And so I want to say it was probably a good like 2 or 3 year stint of me mowing lawns and washing windows. Oh, and cars. I would do anything, dude.
It's almost like a drug habit, Eddie.
I know. Like, I need to get these Star Trek books somehow. And yeah, man, even in my freshman year of high school in Virginia, which is where I started high school, I would legit bring a Star Trek book to school. I'm that guy, dude. So for me, I was like, man, listen, like, not beaten into submission, but especially in Virginia, like for high school, I was like, exhausted, I think is the word. I was just like, I'm tired. I'm tired of keeping up with you people. I'm tired of caring. I'm tired of all this stuff. I'm going to, and what I liked about at least the high school I went to in Virginia was that during lunch, you could pretty much go wherever you wanted on campus. You weren't stuck to the lunchroom. You could go outside, you could go whatever. So I would go outside, sit by a tree, legit eat my lunch, read Star Trek.
That was
heaven to me.
That's awesome.
It was heaven. And that was the better part of my freshman year, was like nearly every lunch.
You're sneaking stuff into your house, like under your coat, and your mom's like, I think he's doing drugs. Like, no. He's reading Star Trek books.
They think the book is hollowed out, has a crack pipe in it. They're like, no, it's a legit book. I'm like, leave me alone.
Meeting people in a van trying to get Star Trek books.
And I thought, exactly. Yo, man, I'm scratching my neck. You got any of those Star Trek books?
That's awesome.
I got three of these. Oh, I've already read those.
Have you heard some of the things that were inspired, inventions that were inspired by Star Trek?
Don't even get me started. Real life technology?
Yes.
So in the original series, their communicators weren't the badges. It was like a handheld device that you would flip open to activate to then talk on. Fast forward, cell phones, modern cell phones, flip phones.
Yep.
That's how they worked. And the notion of, I use this to communicate with pretty much anyone whenever I want.
Yes.
It's on my person, and I can get a hold of them whenever I want.
Motorola even had a device, a model card. They didn't have rights to the Star Trek, so they called it the StarTAC.
Yes. Smart move. Yes. Yeah. And it was like, it had that look.
It was
look.
A handheld. Yep.
Yep. And then taking it a step further, I mean, you don't wear them on your chest, but the watches now, these Apple smartwatches are so small and they do take phone calls. So you could technically tap your watch and start talking to someone with a thing that's so small, you could wear it on your lapel.
Could wear it on, There's the tablet.
Yes.
Flat screen tablets.
Oh, dude.
Were Next Generation. That's where those.
The Next Generation, if you look at the thing, because I had the technical manual, bro. I bought the technical manual. It goes into the fiction or the science. Have,
like, the cross section of
It shows the cross sections. It shows like the layout of the, I think the acronym is LCARS.
Oh, wow.
I want to say that. And I forgot what it meant. I want to say it's LCARS, whatever that stood for. Anyway, the Next Generation, if you remember looking at the panels, mm-hmm. when they obviously those were glass panels sure. that had graphics on them that for the filming of the show just looked what they looked like. But then when they did an actual shot on a certain panel, sometimes it would actually change depending on what was going on. Like the digital effects team would actually make the panels
a little different. Do stuff.
The notion of a dynamic screen was a Next Generation thing. Because think about it, in the 80s, all the buttons we had did one thing.
Yeah.
Even if it was an LCD display, it wasn't touch sensitive.
No.
It was only showing you what it was, mm-hmm. but nothing was what I would dynamic display. Like you hit a button and it changes all the options on that screen.
Yeah.
So dynamic display was a Next Generation concept.
That's awesome.
And then I remember it was like the early 2000s. We bought a printer for my work and it was a dynamic display. The buttons, your options would change based on, and it was all
what you touched.
And it was all a LCD display. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is the Next Generation. This is what I've been waiting for this whole time. So when I look at an iPhone, even now, I'm like, this is Next Generation technology right now.
That's awesome. It's like, that's what you dreamed about under the tree. At school when you're eating your lunch.
Exactly. Oh, I couldn't wait for the tech of Star Trek to start coming true.
Is that one of the things that kind of got you excited or why people kind of like it? It's the
technology
and then the positivity, I guess, too.
I liked that problems that we have now weren't problems for them.
Yeah.
And it seemed like, well, that's kind of how our technology works. I mean, like, you know, 100 years ago, vaccinations weren't a thing.
Sure.
And now polio goes away. You know what I mean?
Even now, you know, the phone, you talked about iPhone.
Yeah.
That iPhone in 1990, the processing power and the capabilities would have been tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct.
And it's in my pocket now.
Yeah. Yeah. A thing that you charge at night by your bed was a thing that would fill up an entire room just to run, you know. And so, seeing those things, like, I'm like, oh, well, we could be that. One day, I don't know about transporter stuff.
Yeah,
could ever that could actually be a thing.
Well, I'm sure there's concepts of it, but there's an episode I watched of the original series where the transporter gets screwed up and divides Kirk in half.
Oh yeah,
so he has the kind of the nice, loving Kirk, and then the angry, aggressive Kirk.
Yes,
and they have to combine them back again, and
it's so weird.
And so they have the. Kirk has to, William Shatner has to act both ways, which that's got to be difficult.
Super passive Kirk and super passive. Angry.
And on that one, that's funny. Dr. McCoy, he's treating Kirk or somebody with his high-tech little hydro spray thing. And then he reaches down and grabs just a regular spray bottle and starts spraying him with this disinfectant.
Oh, no. I got to look that up.
Yeah. It has the Cocker Spaniel with the horn on the front that they use as a prop.
Yes.
So we talk about again, it's 1966. You got to understand they had a limited budget.
The alien creatures that they had to like do with, like you said, the monkey with like ram horns.
Yes.
Man, this isn't any good.
I mean, they got better later, but you know, at the same time, I understand. They got a little bit of a budget, so.
So I can think about the times where even in the time frame, I was like, come on, guys, really? So for me, the Next Generation, the silliest time, I was like, oh, gosh, what are we what are we doing, guys? Was in the episode where they killed Tasha Yar.
Oh, yeah.
Which she should never have left that show. What was that woman thinking?
Well, she thought she was this big star and she's going to go make a ton of money. And then
someone got in her head, man. She's on season 2 of that show and is like, I need off.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Was in season 2 was it season 1?
They killed her in season 2.
Oh, okay.
She was there for a full season and then season 2. And so season 2, there's some weird like tar monster on a planet. And I forget all the stuff, but it's basically like just a hateful thing.
He's off of evil or
something like that.
Like
Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. You know? Slime.
And it manifests in a humanoid kind of form. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly some guy in some tarp covered in tar. And it looks like a guy covered in tar under a tarp. And I'm like, that looks really bad. Like, I don't care what anybody says. And so it was kind of like, hee-hee. Like, that's... And in the Next Generation... I'm sorry, the original series, at least for me, the Cocker Spaniel with a horn, I mean, it's hilarious.
Yes.
One of the ones I thought was funny, there's an episode where it's called The Horda, where they're, like, trapped in a cave. And it's this cave monster that looks like... I think it's made of rock. It's supposed to be made of rock or whatever. And Spock communicates with it and has like an emotional reaction, but the effect of the creature is basically like this blobby looking thing mm-hmm. with a person under it, and they're kind of crawling around as this rock thing. And at one point, Spock gets up on it and is trying to kind of like communicate with it, and just the cheesiness of it is enough that it's like, it pulled me out even as a kid.
That doesn't age well, I guess. Is what
I don't
you're
think
saying.
It does. No,
but I guess when you're a kid in the 80s, you're like, it's a space thing.
Well, plus you're an actor, and I think about people whose job it is. It's like, man, your job is not to like.
I wonder.
You got to act your butt off. That's
you
what
gotta,
it is.
You got to wonder what they're thinking.
Yeah,
I would be curious when they're like, "What are we doing here again? What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a guy under a tarp, and we're just gonna spray some oil on him.
Yeah,
and okay."
I remember the not so much an effect. I guess it is an effect. They got
practical effects, though.
Practical effects. I'll take it. The crew got kidnapped to this planet where this like it looks like a kid, and it is a kid. I think it was Ron Howard's brother, actually.
Oh,
he was
okay.
like this little child king, but he was actually like an adult because he had the voice of a grown man. So it was basically Ron Howard's brother lip syncing with a guy like, "Ha ha, Captain, I brought you to my planet."
It was like dubbed over
It was dubbed over, and it sounded. It looks so bad.
It's like watching those Japanese movies that they dub English over. You're like, this just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's like a 6-year-old's face and body with like a like a grown man talking over it. It was like,
still
ooh.
Awesome. Again, so, they're really trying to tackle some stuff and coming up with these storylines, and I don't know how they came up with some of this stuff, but it's still, again, pretty groundbreaking. Like you said, Star Wars kind of not stole, but borrowed the concept of, of travel.
Space adventure and all that. Yeah.
I think people maybe can connect with Star Trek better because it's our, air quotes here, our timeline or, not
well, this
Star
is, War. Yeah, exactly.
Star Wars is far, far away.
Yeah, they're not even humans. I mean, there's no, the word human's not in there.
No, good point.
You know, no one talks about humanity. There's no Earth. You know, and so what I like about, and we've said it a million times, it's not a dig. It's just Star Wars is like space fantasy and a merger of those two, I think. And you can call it science fiction, too. I'm not that guy who's going to be like, it's not science fiction. I mean, call it science fiction if you want.
Yeah.
But I like that for, at least for Star Trek. And then I know this to be true for the first and the second series. I don't know if this is true for the other series, but the people who were in charge of the technology, like how would this work? Gene Roddenberry's vision was, I want to make sure that there's at least some thought and development behind how this technology works. I don't want it to just be like,
here's a transporter,
space magic, like there's an actual reason, like transport, like the way warp works is like it develops like the warp engine, the warp nacelles generate a pocket around the ship where it basically warps
and
warps
space, and,
space
time.
And time.
Okay. Yeah. Explain that to me. What about warp drives?
Oh Lord. So
briefly,
so it's been a long time, but my understanding of the way warp drive works is that, the way speed of light is measurable. It takes a certain amount of time for light to get to a spot, which is why, like the sun, we're not getting the sunlight we get is what, like
96 million miles away, but it's
It's like 20 minutes old or whatever. It's something like that. Like it takes that long for the sunlight to get to Earth. So the idea being to parallel that with Star Wars. Star Wars has light speed.
Yes, that's hyperdrive.
Hyperdrive. They just call it that, and that's what it is. I'm sure there's books and then retroactively after the fact where they're like, this is what it is. But like George Lucas, when he wrote Star Wars, I can guarantee you he didn't sit down and go, we need to figure out what warp drive, what a hyperspeed is. They just called it hyperspeed, and it means they can get from point A to point B really fast.
It's hyperspace. So I read a little bit about it. It's actually the tearing of space. You're actually ripping through space. That's why when they go in Star Wars, they have the hyperspace. It's kind of this cloud.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically, for lack of a better word, an alternate reality, so to speak.
I see.
And so you can see, the way I understand it is hyperspace, you can see shadows of the real universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when they jump out of hyperspace, they have to have a computer to figure out to see what's around them so that they know where they're at in space.
They don't fly into a planet.
Correct. Whereas warp drives, I think, are a little different.
My understanding of warp drive is that what happens is the warp engine and through these through the warp nacelles create around the ship itself a pocket of space-time, of its own space-time, where space and time essentially don't exist.
Oh, okay.
And they can actually slip through reality faster than the speed of light. And in multipliers of speed of light. So warp one is the speed of light.
Okay.
Warp two, twice the speed of light. Warp three, three times, oh, so on and so forth.
Okay.
And I think for Star Trek, the big limit was warp nine was the fastest.
Yeah, 9.2 or something like that.
The fastest you could go. But I think even now with the current Trek universe, I want to say warp 10 has been achieved, quote unquote.
Yeah. And it's exponential, I think. So
yeah.
Warp speed four is not necessarily four times. It's four times four or something like
Something like that. It keeps,
it's exponential.
Yeah. And then they were getting into that, like, how do you, you know, if you're going to travel that way, how do you avoid getting older as time or staying young as, you know, say you go to Earth and we're sitting here and normal time goes by and you're zipping all over the place. And, but I think that's how they, I think that's how warp solves that, because in that pocket, these guys aren't aging. They're not getting any older or younger. It's just completely suspended. So they can get to Earth instantaneously faster than light. And then for us, it's like, oh, no, not much time's gone.
No time passed, so to speak.
That's a real broken explanation of it. But I do know that warp is faster than the speed of light.
Yes.
And that it does that.
It would have to be, because they're traveling hundreds of light years from Earth.
Right. And then that, that they power it through dilithium crystals and all that stuff. And getting new ones is a giant pain in the butt. And
it's very valuable, and the Klingons want it.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
And I think that I read too that they, since they are traveling that fast, how do you not turn into jelly because of the centrifugal force? I think there's some.
It's the warp. It's the warp. The warp pocket. Okay. In that warp pocket, there's no.
Then the movement.
Yeah. Okay. All that force and all that's happening outside the pocket. Okay. In the pocket, you're basically completely safe. I mean, it's almost like picture like your fist, like with in the middle of your fist, something is floating in that, and you're moving around, and it's moving with you. Like it's gonna be okay.
That's a good point about you mentioned the aging. So. Aging doesn't take place.
So say, possibly? I'm thinking the mathematics of it is, say we're on Earth, right?
Okay.
And the speed of light is the speed of light. Like, we're not moving any faster or slower. We're just moving the rate we move. And they're zipping all over the galaxy instantly. If they were going the speed of light, they would age.
Age. Okay.
Because they're going the speed of light. Nothing has changed. It's just they're we would age. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. They would age. Yes. We would still age too. But because it's all still 1-to-1.
Okay.
They may be able to go faster, further, whatever, and then come back and not be aged much. And we've aged 10 years. The whole warp thing allows them to not age, because they're going faster than light. So they're going 2, 3, 4, 5 times faster.
Yeah.
So it's even less time for them to get where they need to get. And even though time has passed for us, it's just that much less time.
Less time. Okay.
You know, if it was the speed of light, it would still be the constant.
Yeah.
But now, since, you know, say they went warp 5, warp 6, you know, warp's been gone 6 months, you know, for him, he's been gone 10 minutes or whatever. So it's like they're still aging,
okay,
but the gaps aren't as big.
Aren't as big. Okay.
It's almost like that if you saw Interstellar, but just the way gravity worked on that planet, like, dude, so time goes by super fast on this planet. 20 years are going to go by up here. You're going to be down there for half an hour.
Yeah.
Hurry.
Yeah.
And so I think it's that's exactly what's happening, is like they couldn't accelerate it or decelerate it. It was a constant, but the constants were different. I don't know. I'm falling. Like, this is where I would love to sit down and, like, actually have this written out. Like, how do they not age?
You're going to have, this big wall with all these different mathematical equations on it.
I'm ready. Let's do that. How does it, you come back to Earth and everybody's 100 years old and you're oh, oops.
How do they do that?
Flight of the Navigator.
There you go.
Essentially. But my understanding is that warp is what allows that, because you're going that much faster than the speed of light.
What a concept.
Yeah.
Oh, how Gene came up with that.
I mean, you're talking about a guy.
Do a lot of cocaine. I don't know.
Cocaine, so many piles of cocaine. I think that was just standard diet.
He drank a lot, I guess.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did drink a lot.
Yeah. I do know that, he was a pilot, or he was in the military for a short amount of time.
I'm sure.
Not that means that he's going to be good at writing science fiction.
No.
But I think for them having some root, and not that there wasn't like, hey, not that we're never going to say, hey, because space magic, but I want a lot of this stuff to be rooted in some form of science.
Have at least a base of some science.
And even if we have to bend those rules.
And being in the military, he kind of understood the whole, you know, Starfleet, the ranks and how
that would break down.
The Prime Directive and some of all that stuff.
I love those kinds of things. How they're like, they have this one rule, man. It's like, we got one real hard rule here, and that's don't mess with a culture that's pre-warp technology.
Yeah.
You just can't do it.
And then they do it.
They do it anyway. Kirk.
Oh, well. Well, let's put a pin in this, Eddie. It's been fun. I'm sure we could dive in even further. Maybe next time, again, we're going to have a wall full of equations. Eddie's going to solve warp travel.
This is only part one of our Star Trek series.
This is part one of 178 episodes.
Yes!
Eddie figures out warp drives.
We're going to do this.
And then he builds one in his backyard.
We're going to build it, Lee, and we're going to just travel all over the place.
There you go. And we're going to have dogs with horns on them.
Yes!
And tribbles. And then a spray bottle.
Next
to our laser.
I'll be the evil Kirk. You can be the good one.
That's awesome. And then you can have set our phasers to stun to kill.
Set phasers to kill.
That's Eddie's new motto.
Exactly.
Set our phasers to kill.
Set this podcast to kill.
Yes. Can you say engage? Or listen, what did Kirk say? I know.
Make it
Picard.
So.
Make it so. Picard was engage.
Yeah. Well, no. Make it so was both of them.
Oh, okay.
And then, I mean, he'd say make it so, and he would also go engage.
Engage, and that was kind of his little tagline.
But, yeah, make it so was like the big one, I think, too. Yeah.
Because you have good engage. Journey on Mega, so we need to, you need to
engage.
So cool. All right. Well, thanks, Eddie. And I'll put a link in the show notes to all Eddie's podcasts again, and you can check him out. He's got some great podcasts, and hopefully we can have you on again and do another topic. I don't know what we'll figure out other than warp drives.
More Star Trek. We can talk about food replicators.
Ooh. Okay.
See? How do you turn my poo-poo into... filet mignon.
Mysteries that'll never be solved, maybe.
Star Trek.
So, all right. Well, thanks, Eddie. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
So much fun talking to Eddie. He's such a character. I hope we can do it again. Please go to covertnerd.net for all the links that we mentioned in the show. And you can also check out other episodes as well and the other podcasts that Eddie is in. So thank you for listening. And until next time, nerd it up.